When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. Movies, video games, comic books, TV, and probably a lot more pop culture talk across the cosmos. There's been so much going on, and Geekscapists, I am so happy that you loved last week's episode of Drew Selden, who runs Comic-Con Revolution that's coming to Ontario in mid-May. I can't wait to go. It was great. It'll be my first time at Comic-Con Revolution, and I thought Drew was a great guest. With new guests, you never know. Not that we've had some bad guests on Geekscape. We haven't. We've had always some really good guests, but I want great guests, like the guest Jordan Morris that we're going to have today. I know he's a great guest. Why? Because he has his own podcast, Jordan Jesse Go. He's got his own graphic novels and his own comics, and he writes for animated TV, like this new Animaniacs University type show that we got going on. What's the Yogi Bear show? that there's a new revamp of all the Hanna-Barbera stuff where they're all together. It's like the MCU of Hanna-Barbera. It's a brand new show. He writes on that. So my guest today is easily vetted, right? Not only that, let me just vet Jordan Morris for you real fast. I went to see MXPX and Less Than Jake in January. And I'm standing there by the merch because my friend wanted to go check out the merch. And I'm like, I'm not getting in that line, pal. And I'm standing there and suddenly there's a woman staring at me and she goes, "Hey, hey." And I'm watching this. I'm looking at this person and I'm a little slow. So I said, "Who is this really cool looking person staring at me?" And like, she knows me. It was Bria Grant. And I hadn't seen her in years. Bria Grant, y'all know from Heroes, she's an incredible writer director. Her films are amazing, and she used to come on Geekscape a little more regularly. She used to come to the Geekscape booth. I don't think she's been at the Geekscape booth since WonderCon in San Francisco. The last year they were in San Francisco, that puts into context how long it's been since Bria Grant has been at the Geekscape booth. I think we got to correct that this summer if she's going to be in San Diego. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, "Oh my God, Bria Grant! Like, I'm so sorry. I hadn't seen you in so long." She's more friends with Heidi. Like, she and Heidi talk to each other. They follow each other on socials. And so I just had like a brain hiccup. And I said, "Listen, you got to come back on Geekscape." And I still mean that. And she said, "Who you really want is this man right here." And she pulled up her friend, Jordan Morris, who you're about to meet. And immediately I see this man and he has a beautiful beard and he's warm. And I said, "I want to give him a hug. And if he knows comics, and if he's at an MXPX Less Than Jake show, I know there's a kinship here that I felt immediately." And so we made plans to get him on Geekscape. I said, "Let's hold off until we can talk about your brand new upcoming graphic novel that comes out in July. Maybe some of the work that you do for Archie Comics. Let's just talk about all the kick-ass stuff you do." And so here we are. Jordan's going to be on the show. We're going to talk his upcoming graphic novel, Youth Group. Matt Kelly from the Horror Movie Night podcast and who runs this very Geekscape network is on. So it's going to be a damn good show. If you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, go share it with your friends. Be like, "Hey, you got to get in here." Hit that thumbs up button if you're on YouTube. I hear that helps us a lot. Also, leave comments. We got the chat room open. If you're listening to this later on the podcast feed, dude, share it, leave a review, all that stuff that helps our visibility. But right now I've got one job. It's to start the podcast. So let's go. All right, Geekscapists, welcome to Geekscape. Let's get this thing started. The cartoon I was thinking of, and thank you so much, is Jellystone. And again, it's like the MCU of like the Hanna-Barbera universe. I'm trying to think of all the different Hanna-Barbera characters that weren't in the Wacky Races, and I'm immediately like thinking of just Saturday morning. I just had a Saturday morning cartoon explosion in my head. All that to say, our former like Geekscape guest Tony Fleece is a good friend of the show. He did put out his Boom comic Uncanny Valley this past week. If you guys are looking for comic books to buy and you didn't get enough of Feral, issue 2 is coming out this week. I got a lot of good comments from that recommendation. Go get Uncanny Valley. It's awesome. I read that first issue, and when we're speaking about things like a bunch of cartoon characters together, you'll know what I'm talking about when you read Uncanny Valley. It's a little kid who finds out he has cartoon adjacent kind of powers, and he doesn't quite know why, but his grandfather might be a cartoon character, which has given him the ability to like fall through the floor from a height and leave like his silhouette. Or when he runs real fast, first he like revs up and then leaves like a cloud of dust in his silhouette or something like that. And the kid has comic book powers like a cartoon character. And it's a really fun comic, but he's also human. So he looks realistic. He looks human, but weird stuff starts happening, you know, and that's been just awesome. And of course, Tony's a great friend, so I want to promote that book. But let's talk to the man himself, this man, our guest, Jordan, who is writing the cartoons that we're talking about. Now let's bring him in right here with Matt Kelly.
Hey, hi, everybody. Hi, John. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Thanks for saving me in the private chat with that Jellystone.
no problem.
Am I right that that's like the MCU of Hanna-Barbera?
Yes. So Yogi is Thanos. Boo Boo is Cap. Jabberjaw is Wong.
Gotta have Jabberjaw. Gotta have Jabberjaw.
We're talking Jabberjaw. We're talking Squiddly Diddlies there. Top Cat, Snagglepuss, and yes, absolutely. It's a big old cartoon crossover. And yeah, actually, in the next batch of episodes, I think they've said this publicly, they're going to start dumping in characters from like Cartoon Network. So, yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we did a
Space Ghost and stuff like that.
Space Ghost in this season. Space Ghost, Brack, Zorak, and Moltar have all shown up. Yeah, these are all in the current season of Jellystone. And we do have like a Crisis on Infinite Earths type parody in the next season or the next drop or whatever they're calling it these days, where you will see some more Cartoon Network favorites.
The Herculoids.
Herculoids are there. Herculoids are going to show up.
Yeah, those are my
Thundar the Barbarian.
Herculoids were my jam. And Jordan, you don't strike me as somebody who needed to do a whole lot of research for this gig.
No, oh no, I was ready with pitches. I came into the second season, so they had already done a season. I had watched every episode and like already was like dreaming of scenarios for these characters. So yeah, I was so thrilled when they asked me to be a part of it. And yeah, I in some cases I did know characters that the creators had forgotten. So,
wait,
yeah.
For real?
Yeah, totally.
And one question I have for you: when you're writing the episodes, what sugar cereal are you eating while you
write these things? So basically, what we had to do was we had to go to a garbage dump and find some expired Ecto Cooler. There is some Ecto Cooler buried in a landfill in Arizona. We had to get that, and of course, Pac-Man cereal and the Super Mario Legend of Zelda cereal that came in the 2-pack. Again, these are all things you find in garbage dumps out in the Yucca Flats with the old ET cartridges.
That's how you channel. You crush them, snort them, and then you're ready to write one of these cartoons.
Yes, we cannot consume anything that was made after the year 1989. Some Jellystone.
Geekscapist Jordan also wrote for At Midnight. Your cred is legit, but
no shucks, thank you.
There was a time when I only knew you from the MXPX show at the Palladium.
Yeah. that's my greatest credit is MXPX show attendee.
And you're wearing a Cat Bite shirt, and I know that Cat Bite just did some South by Southwest dates and adjacent dates with our friend, and I and I might be getting this wrong, but I think Brian Clem from Suburban Legends filled in for them.
Oh, cool.
I
think he was posting about that.
Yeah. On Facebook. We love Brian, who did the original theme song for my first podcast, Geekdrome, and that was Brian Clem doing his little metal. But now we have the Punchline Boys doing our long theme song. Maybe we get a band to cover our theme song to update the theme song. I don't know.
I mean, you're getting close to 700 episodes.
Dude, we are. The problem is we've blown past like 1,000 episodes almost.
If yeah, you count with all like the specials. Yeah.
The live at a con and this and that. But the official numbered episodes, of which this is 691, we're getting really close. And Matt, I don't know what the hell to do about it. It's going to land sometime close to San Diego Comic-Con, but I won't probably be at San Diego Comic-Con for very long because the babies do like around that window. Maybe that's the episode, is baby comes into the world on episode 700.
Can you slow down releases to make that happen? Because that's 9 weeks from now.
Induce labor.
Yeah. Let me write that's the boss.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable she feels
right
about that. But it's a joke. I think Matt Sazima made the joke. He's like, hey, you know, because I told him, I was like, hey guys, I don't know if we're doing a panel this year at Comic-Con. I may not be able to be there the whole time. Spoiler, I won't. And he said, well, just have, you know, you proposed at Comic-Con. Why don't you just have the baby at Comic-Con? I was like, I don't know, Matt. You could just imagine Matt delivering a baby at the Geekscape booth. I'm not ready.
Right into the waiting arms of Will Wheaton.
who again, like Brea, is closer friends with Heidi than he is with me.
Oh, okay. No, you know, actually, that was just a random Comic-Con poll. I didn't know that was somebody.
The last time I saw him was backstage at a Comic-Con. It was before one of us was. He was coming off stage, or I was coming off stage, or something was happening, but Will was great, and he's always great. And before that, the last time I saw him, when we were talking about people we see at shows, Nerf Herder MTX.
Oh, yeah.
At the Troubadour. He was there. So, Jordan, talk to us about this brand new book, Youth Group. This thing, Geekscapists, it comes out July. July 16th. He's got this youth group. And I read the youth group. I liked it. But what's the elevator pitch for the Geekscapists?
So this is exciting day. A good day to be recording with y'all because I got my author copy in the mail. I touched this thing for the first time today. So very exciting. But yeah, there you go. You're going full screen with the graphic for the folks watching on YouTube. Youth Group. Okay. Elevator pitch. Got to do it. It is a story about teenage exorcists. It is about a bunch of goofy teenage exorcists. It's got Buffy the Vampire Slayer vibes. It's got Shaun of the Dead vibes. It's a horror comedy. And it's like, what if the world's goofiest Bible study group actually had to fight demons? I kind of grew up in one of these like cool Bible studies for hip teens. And I always just kind of wanted to write about that world. It was a kind of a funny world that I never see like portrayed correctly in media.
It's a world that's only portrayed in the dumbest negative lights, when like I can say, as someone who grew up in that same scene, like
you're still growing
some
up
of the
it, Matt. You're still
I up. Mean I'm a youth leader now, yeah. But some of the some of the funniest, strangest people I've ever met were part of like a church youth group. Like they're just very, I mean, no I think that there's literally no group of people who quote Monty Python and the Holy Grail more than youth group kids, which is weird.
In Geekscape, as Jordan did have a good elevator pitch, is very much that Buffy vibe, by way of like Saved, where the kids are shaded across their devotion to the their faith, but ultimately what they're really dedicated to, when all said and done, is stopping demons from possessing people and taking over the world.
Yeah,
exactly like how when I was in church.
And this is I was about to joke and say that this was an autobiographical story, but I think ultimately it is more personal than what we let on, because it does sound very high concept Geekscapist. And when you read it and you get into it, you start thinking, oh, yeah, like I get it. It is like Saved, you know, that movie Saved meets, you know, vampire, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's super, I get it. And then as you start to read it, you can't help but realize
Jordan is writing about his own experiences.
Yeah, that's pretty perceptive of you. I actually, when I pitched this book, the publisher is First Second, by the way.
I love First Second. Their stuff is so high quality, Geekscapists. Yeah. They have a handsome edition of everything. Everything they publish is so handsome. Yeah, are they European? Yeah.
No, they're based in New York City.
But you get what I'm saying, right?
They are. And they do look like those French comics, you know, those fancy French. But yeah, no, this book is really gorgeous. The art, I should say. I'm sorry I have not mentioned the artist yet. Bowen McGurdy, the great Bowen McGurdy. They've done a great series for Boom called Spectre Inspectors and a couple issues of Marvel. Yeah, Bowen's so talented, so fun to work with. And yeah, Bowen's characters are just like super expressive. They really Bowen's sense of comedy is so great, and yeah, just like so much fun to work with. Gorgeous book. And yeah, so First Second, I my editor over there is Callista Brill, and I pitched her this idea, and it was originally, so the book is set in the 90s, but my pitch was not set in the 90s. My pitch was set in modern day. And Callista's like, I like this. I have a couple changes I think you should make. And one of them was set it in the 90s. She's like, this seems like you are writing about a personal experience. Can you set this in the 90s when you grew up? And I thought that was kind of a cool idea. Love a period piece. And I think she was really right. I typically don't do a lot of really personal writing. Jellystone. This is finding funny things for Squiddly Diddly to do. Not a lot of room in there.
There's a lot of sourpuss in front of you.
Yeah.
Snagglepuss. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
I'm kind of a top cat type. A lot of people.
And whenever you laugh, you go
yes, like Muttley. Just like Muttley. Snidely Whiplash's sidekick. Yes. But I think what Callista saw was that I was, you know, trying to tell a story that was a little bit more personal, even if I kind of didn't know it at the time. And yeah, so when I did like my proofread of it, that was really clear to me. I kind of even didn't set out to do it, but it is really personal. I don't know if you would like see a character in it and you're like, that's Jordan, but like there's a lot of stuff from my childhood in it, and a lot of stuff, you know, that I thought when I was a kid and stuff like that. So yeah, I think you're right about that. I think it is like a kind of a sneaky sub 1/8 of a memoir.
Well, you're allowed to give characters your alternating opinions on your alternating perspectives. You're allowed to give the four or five characters in the room different arguments and have them play devil's advocate to each other, or have them have disagreements with each other. I mean, if you're a writer, you suffer some from some form of multiple personality disorder. We may have the mildest form, you know, and like anybody who's followed Geekscape for any length of time knows the multiple personalities that are played here on the podcast throughout the years. And I think that it's okay to not have the one avatar character that is you throughout the series. They all can share facets of yourself and maybe yourself at different ages, right?
Yeah, totally.
You're allowed to be the dad and the kid in this.
Yeah. And I think when I do, you know, writing that is more mine and not
stupid. Just keep going.
Oh, I didn't get that. What did I miss? What did I miss?
You said doo-doo. Oh. And John is 5.
You got a kid on the way. This kind of stuff is going to kill with the kid. This is great.
Okay.
You
have to start.
That's going to be better.
Not so much the podcast listeners. Yeah. You turn this crap right off.
Doo-doo, perfect for the kid. The stuff that you send me on TikTok, not as great.
Those are kids getting hurt. When the screen grab is a kid on a roof, it's like, oh, we don't have this.
Yeah, we're so.
Why is he holding a snake?
This is not going to end with the kid successfully putting up Christmas decorations. No one wants to see that. I think when I do writing that's more like, you know, from my own brain and not, you know, someone else's IP or someone else's show, like I do try and put little bits of myself into all the characters, so it doesn't seem like, you know, there's just one like hero character that I think is me. You know, that's always so annoying when you can kind of tell somebody did that in writing. So yeah, I try and like, you know, make everybody different and, but you know, have a little bit of myself in everybody so that, you know, I think you like you know, you should love those characters when you're writing them. And I think it you know, it helps if you can kind of empathize with all of them.
Was writing comics always the goal, Jordan, when you started out being a writer? Because you've written comedy for several, you know, animated projects, or, you know, I'm guessing acting was in your past. It may still be in your present.
I did a little bit of acting when I first moved to LA. I had 5 lines on an episode of Scandal. A couple. Ooh, yeah, thank good. You. I know. Yeah,
you are
yeah.
the Scandal. That was scandalous. Yeah,
that was pretty scandalous.
Yeah.
And when you come to sign at San Diego Comic Con, it will say Scandals.
Right. I am well aware that's my biggest credit. Mm-hmm. My mom loves that. All my mom's friends saw that episode. They're huge in our family. I haven't acted in a long time. I'll do a little like sketch acting sometimes and things for fun. But writing's kind of more where my passion is. And yeah, I had always wanted to do comics. I mean, I was a comics kid and always kind of dreamed about it. And I took a couple swings at it like in my 20s and 30s, but nothing really panned out. And yeah, when I finally got to do my first comics project is a book called Bubble, also with First Second, based on the scripted podcast of the same name. It's a sci-fi comedy. And two Eisner nominations. I'll go ahead and say that. Why not?
Only two Eisner nominations, but it may not just remain a podcast and in a graphic novel, correct?
We're developing a Bubble movie as we speak, and it's chugging along. I think that'll be really fun. Fingers
you
crossed.
You get more than 5 lines in the Bubble movie?
No, I get 4 lines and then I am killed. So I get no residuals.
It's your movie. You're going to get some residuals.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you sell them Netflix.
I had a bad deal. I had a really bad deal. I should have asked a lawyer to look at the contract.
Do you see that Netflix is starting? They have a new head, and he's like, we're going to not just make premiere movies that have some theatrical built in, but we're going to actually make some middle level movies. And so Netflix might be the return of some of those smaller indies and mid-range movies. And I'm just thinking about this because it was an interview that popped up in the trades like yesterday. But I've been saying for a long time how frustrating it's been as a filmmaker that you're either in the Marvel game and you're making stuff for like 100+ million, or you're in the trying to figure out how under 2-3 million you can make it to stay within SAG guidelines of an indie. But the idea that we're ever going to have like the, what were those movies with the Underworld, like an Underworld type movie, those 20 to $30 million
like
movies.
Resident Evil, Jovovich Resident Evil movies.
Those have been gone for 10 plus years. And this is Geekscape. So for people who love genre, to make new IP and make new properties, that stuff has just been gone. And it's either been, again, like a major Marvel or major IP, or or you're making Saw, that first Saw, or you're making something that's beneath, you know, livable wage. And I found this on the Horror Movie Night podcast. This is Matt from Horror Movie Night right here with us. You guys have a group on Facebook that is boisterous. I love it. And they posted about the actors from Blair Witch Project, another movie that was that's like the most sub-budget thing. And remember, it was listed as the most profitable movie ever made because it made gangbusters. But the actors,
I think Paranormal Activity may have surpassed.
Sure. But they never saw anything. The actors aren't getting residuals.
And you have to think that like, not only did they act in this movie, which like admittedly was shot, it was shot over like, I think 7 days or something.
When I saw the Blair Witch Project, I thought it was real. I was,
for sure. A lot of people did.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
It has a website. It's a movie with a website. It has to be real.
The thing is, like, these actors didn't just film a thing in the woods for 7 days. They literally signed a contract that they would go into hiding for a year so that when like this promotion started, even people who knew them would be like, man, I haven't seen that person for a while. And like, for them to get no money for like basically a year of performance art for the sake of some
and that thing's been rebooted film, 3 or 4 times, and there's video games.
It created an entire genre, one of which, I mean, a result of which is Paranormal Activity. Like the whole found footage genre is a result. Sorry to go on that tangent, but I find it hopeful that the idea of streamers, which in a lot of ways have hurt that model, or maybe the savior of those middle range movies models.
Netflix is weird, yeah, though, John. Like, you know, okay, so real quick, one of the shows on our network, YAOK, one of the hosts of it is Alyssa Lub from The Circle, the Netflix series, reality show The Circle. There hasn't been a new season of The Circle for almost 2 years. The reason being that the building that they would film it in England is shut down. So they had to come to Georgia, build a brand new building for this like highly interactive reality show. And it came out last week. I've watched every season of that show 3 times. It wasn't promoted to me. I had to find out from other people saying, hey, I thought The Circle was supposed to, like, this is stuff that gets me frustrated with Netflix. Matt, is like, really, why would you? Well, no, but it's like, why would you spend this much money on a show and then not promote it to the audience that has been waiting 2 years for a new season? Like, we only found out because the host of the show tweeted out, I don't know why no one's posted about this, but our new season comes out today.
I just thought the learning curve was going to be shorter on these growing pains. I thought the growing pains were going to be shorter. And I thought that when we had access to information in the way that streaming promised, that it was like, we're going to know exactly who downloads your show. We're going to know exactly who your viewers are. We're going to know exactly how many there are. You'd think that that would have mobilized this a lot more efficiently. And instead, if anything, it feels more like disorganized,
buried in the I mean, that's why what's his face left Netflix to go to Amazon, that did the Haunting of shows, was when he was like, Midnight Club just was not being pushed to anybody. And I think he posted a similar tweet where he's like, has anyone logged into Netflix and had this show promoted to them? And like, it was a resounding no.
I've worked on a couple of shows where I have felt that, you know, I felt that like, we made this great show and it's here and a lot of people would like to watch it. And it is so strange that the streamers, this is something I can't get over, is that they would pay to make original content like your Circles or like your some things I worked on. Yeah. And then it just gets buried behind the library content. It's like, it's like, they're like, here's Suits. Here's The Office. Here's Phineas and Ferb. And it's
stuff
like,
that they don't even own the rights to the IP, like the licensed stuff.
And I thought that like making the original stuff was supposed to kind of wean people off the licensed content or keep them there. But I think it is just that, like, you know, their handcuffs are the people just are kind of rewatching The Office and binging Suits and, you know, Community, name your comfort show. But yeah, it does seem like they are not taking the chance to promote
Scandal.
These.
No,
but I mean, Scandal, and yet another great example. Now on Tubi, check out Scandal on Tubi.
Wait, did you write Bubble, the Bubble feature? Or
I am someone who is writing it. Yes.
Okay. All right. That's where it is in the process. Is script.
Maybe I'm not supposed to say. Stay tuned to your local entertainment trade.
Okay. We'll stay right here on Geekscape.
Everybody's all subscribed right up to Variety, right?
we'll tell you about it right here.
There you go.
We'll pop the bubble right here for you guys.
There you go. Please do. Yes.
Matt, you were going to say something, Matt?
Not really.
Well, I mean, Matt, you were at that horror convention this past weekend, and you and I know you and I were exchanging texts.
I want to hear about that.
Every time you guys go to these horror conventions, like, no offense, like, and I'm somebody who's spoiled because Los Angeles, and not that you don't, I mean, you live in Philly, you just had WrestleMania weekend take over your town, but I'm always like, it's San Diego, and it's always like these regional cons. Like, I always think you're getting murdered.
No,
or you're giving money to a cult.
No, Creature Feature Weekend. So I mean, again, these shows, they have maybe one or two like big names.
Give me an example of a big name.
So the biggest name this year was Bill Moseley.
Yeah, that's a pretty big name when it comes to horror.
That's a name.
It was Bill Moseley and Ray Park were the two big names that were at the show.
Yeah, you guys have met them all. That's great.
Yeah. So
or
so
Snake Eyes from the first. Never mind. Yeah,
but you have these two big guests, and then
are they fighting at the con? Is that part of the
appeal? They were side by side. Well, actually, there was a guy cosplaying as Godzilla and another guy cosplaying as King Kong, and right in front of our table, they saw each other from the other ends of the convention and just started brawling.
When is that? When is that video coming to? I mean, knowing that
it happens so quick, when is that video coming?
Matt, come on.
Why do you even go to these conventions if you're not going to be a journalist?
To sell shirts.
How many shirts did you sell this weekend?
A couple. We sold a lot of used VHS tapes and books, so we did real well. But then they have these smaller guests, but like the brilliance of these smaller guests, John, is that it's people who never get booked at shows.
Give me an example, sir.
They had everyone but Bruce Campbell from the first Evil Dead movie there.
Okay.
And did photo makeup opportunity photo ops of like the girl with her face all painted up when she's like sitting on the floor and stuff like that. That's cool. They would come up with those creative photo ops. They did a live commentary of the movie on Friday night. So they like played Evil Dead and gave all the cast members microphones, and they were talking over top of the movie and telling stories of specific scenes.
Is there anybody in the audience who was like, I haven't seen it before and you guys are ruining it?
Nope, nobody at that convention has not seen Evil Dead. But,
like, I got to moderate a couple panels, and one of the big ones that I was really excited about was I got to talk to DJ McHale, who is the creator and the sole writer of all 91 episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wait,
and he,
I didn't know that was one wrote, guy, huh?
So someone asked,
is that like
him,
a Trey Parker thing where more people are writing it, but he's the one crediting?
No. So the way he explained it,
I've heard that's how it worked.
Yeah. No, the way he explained it was that the budget on that show, because it was a very low budget show, because Nickelodeon at the time was like, I don't know, we're doing a horror show for kids. Like, they were kind of prepared for that show to get canceled at any minute. So he basically took the little bit of money they gave him for a writer's group and instead would have, before every season, a pitch meeting. And anybody whose pitch he liked, he gave them money from what would have been the writer's staff money, and then just bought their 13 ideas and locked himself away and wrote the 13 scripts.
That's what they're
going to
do with Jordan for Jellystone when they realize that he knows all of it.
Yeah.
He knows it.
That was
the encyclopedia of Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, we need more obscure Hanna-Barbera characters. Do you have any Frankenstein Jr. pitches?
I'm going to drive past Warner Brothers, Impossibles, and they're going to have you on top of the building while your ankle's just shaking cartoon ideas out of you.
But I did that. I did the Mutilator panel, and they do one of the things they do at this show that I have never really seen at another horror convention is because Gettysburg isn't that far from Pittsburgh. They bring in a bunch of the former students from Tom Savini's makeup school, and for these makeup photo ops, they actually do the live makeup application, and I get to moderate those a lot of the time. That's so cool. I'll be interviewing the makeup artist and the actor. So for that one, it was Christy Angus, who is the girl in Jason X who gets her head frozen and smashed.
Whoa.
And they were recreating the frozen face for a photo op that she was doing with the frozen face.
You
so
love
it was
this
kind
stuff.
Of oh, it was
you
I mean,
are and, like Jordan when it comes to the Hanna-Barbera characters, but you, that's you with like you
dumb
know.
Pop culture. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean with this horror stuff.
With
you
the horror
are
stuff
like,
specifically,
oh my
god.
Someone who is memorably killed in something.
Yeah, I mean, but that's like the big thing. And it's like those people, when you're talking to those actors, it's very much like in that best worst movie documentary about Troll 2, where like so many of them, it's like, this was just some random thing I did, and I didn't realize how much this meant to like an audience of people. Until they're experiencing it. And I did get to see the premiere of the Mutilator 2, which, John, I texted you this that night.
You did. And beforehand, like, there's Geekscape is listening to this or watching this who don't know what the heck Mutilator 1 is. Okay. So, like, give us context of Mutilator 1. When did it come out? Because Mutilator 2...
1984. It is 40 years later. Wow. The original director finally made a sequel. And that was kind of the most... So here's the thing.
What is Mutilator? What's his deal? Is he like a Freddy? Okay, like, what's his deal?
No. So Mutilator is just another one of the many like low budget slasher films from the 80s that were just trying to like catch that
wave. Does he have superpowers, or he's just somebody who's angry and
it's just a guy named Big Ed. But the big thing was like how it was very brutal with the kills. It was released unrated because the director refused to cut out the kills in the movie. So what happened, and he told me this whole story when I sat down with him for the panel, was he was a lawyer. He was a well-paid lawyer. He was living comfortably, but he always dreamed about being a filmmaker. And he had read that horror films at that time were the best way to do it. So he wrote a horror film, and him and his friends made this horror movie, and it was the best time of his entire life. And then his dad dies. And he has to take over the family business. And he's like, I took over the family business. I got married. I had kids, like this, that, and the other thing. He's like, but I never stopped thinking about how badly I wanted to make more movies and how I wanted to do a sequel to The Mutilator. And the way he worded it was, he was like, you know, I just realized, like, either you make the movie or you don't make the movie, but you got to stop thinking about it. So which one of them are you going to do? So he makes, 40 years later, he makes the sequel. He gets all of his friends who were in the first one back.
Didn't get mutilated in the story?
He gets, well, so the premise is that the movie Mutilator that you watched in 1984 is just that, a movie. And now someone's doing a remake of that movie, and they're bringing the whole cast and crew to the rap party. And mutilating then them. And someone starts mutilating. There's a real Big Ed.
An impersonator of Big Ed who's like doing it. And yeah. Matt, this is where I tell the audience what you texted me, and keep him in, like, I took the phone when you texted me, and I go, the fuck? And like, I pulled it away from my face, because what you said is, this is my favorite movie of 2024, and it may remain your favorite movie of 2024.
So, it might be. So Kyle and I from Horror Movie Night, the movie is 70 minutes long. We went to a 9.
It's like the fucking Dumbo of horror movies.
All killer, no filler.
Yeah.
So, well, I wish I could say that, but so we go to this 9:45 screening. Movie's over by 11. Kyle and I were awake until 1:30 in the morning in the hotel room, just talking about this movie.
Did like, you share the room with Scott, or did he?
Oh,
he,
no, Scott bought his own room. He's not.
Yeah, if you guys are gonna be pulling that crap.
And then we called each other on the drive home the next morning to talk about it more, because we're like, I can't stop thinking about this movie. And like, let me preface this with, like, this isn't a good movie. Like, this is like a Neil Breen or a Tommy Wiseau. Like the way that Kyle worded it was like, this is a guy who made a movie in 1984, stepped away from everything filmmaking, didn't know what's been happening in filmmaking, and just tried to pick up right where he left, like it was 1985.
He did that with the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, exactly. But
I'm
like,
kidding, George. I'm kidding.
But it is prequels are tight. It is so charming, because the movie just oozes. This is a love letter from Buddy Cooper, the director, on how much he loved making a movie 40 years ago. Like, that's like all you feel when you watch the movie. Then you get to the kills. Like, it's like 45 minutes of introducing like all these characters, because it's a whodunit. And then the last 30 minutes is literally a kill every single minute. In some of the most brutal, insane kills I've ever seen put to film.
Yeah. Every minute?
Every minute
it's
or
a bloodbath.
Two, yeah.
It's just a bloodbath.
It is an absolute... It is.
The audience must have been going ape shit.
We were screaming. We were loving it. There was at least 3 kills where I like, like was like, oh no.
Is this would you say it's crazier than the Terrifier movies?
See, now the Terrifier movies I don't like because it's too realistic. It's like, so I'm going to spoil a slight kill in this movie, but this is the type of movie where someone says, takes a fishing line and gets the hook in someone's eyeball and then reels the eyeball
out of
their skull.
I'm in. Like, I'm in. Sold. I'm in. If it's like the Jason kills, you know, with the sleeping bag or the porta potty like that, if it's that kind of fun stuff, I'm in for this mutilator.
So much fun.
Was there news about that thing coming out? Can it be released? Right, like if it's a
That's the thing that's going to be the interesting part. I think is, I'm sure a streaming service would buy this.
Yeah,
but I don't know what the rules are, because I think Buddy again wants this to be his cut. I think he wants his unrated director's cut to be what people see, and I don't know where the rules are with streaming if he decides to just go without an MPAA rating on it. Like, I don't know what Shudder and stuff.
Do those Full Moon movies get streamed at all? Because, like, you know those guys over at Full Moon near us.
That's another thing you can watch on Tubi.
Yeah.
Big Full
Moon that's on Tubi.
Oh, then maybe it's just Tubes.
I literally said to, so the one actor in the movie, because their table was right next to our table, and I became really good friends with the actors.
Hey, did you see that Godzilla King Kong that I didn't film?
Why'd you guys?
Jonathan would have loved that. Why am I even going to conventions if I can't be a journalist for Geekscape?
But him and I exchanged numbers, and he was texting me like, he's like, I don't know. I was like, I think this is like a Tubi Screamcast Shudder movie. Like, I think this is something that they'll get all over. Or honestly, what it feels the most like is a Lloyd Kaufman directed trauma.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Cool.
And you know how we love Lloyd. Lloyd was the first person to try and option my student film ever.
Yeah.
And National Lampoon did end up optioning it, but Lloyd sent me a Bible and no money. So I didn't do it. But I love Lloyd. And you know, every Lloyd. Time I see Lloyd, he goes, Game by Dawn, the horror movie Game by Dawn. And what's funny is I got a text today from someone who was like, I want to write the Game by Dawn movie. And I was like, all right, that's cool. When you get back in town, they're doing effects up in, they're doing horror effects. This is a horror effect person. And they're like, I'm going to San Francisco until mid-June. And when I come back, Game by Dawn. I was like, you can write it. Sure. Yeah. Let's go. Matt, I had something I wanted to say to you, but I love you. Matt is going to be running our booth at Comic-Con this summer because, again, my baby is getting born within that window. Jordan, your book also comes in out around that window.
Like
so
a week before.
You should for sure be signing at San Diego at the booth. Please.
Oh, yeah. I would love signing, to. For sure.
Whatever
please.
You want to do.
Let's do it. Let's shake hands on it right here.
I saw my friend Ken Christensen, who had some Image books come out. I don't know who's putting out his next comics. He wants to come and do a signing. The road to Comic-Con is coming fast, Geekscapists. And
it's
nuts. one thing that is important that weekend to not forget is Deadpool Wolverine. Oh my God. Heidi is like, well, Jonathan, if you're not going to be at Comic-Con the whole time to because I'm having a baby, do you think we can, if you come back on Thursday, we can go to see Deadpool Wolverine on Friday? And I'm like, sweetie, you are going to be as pregnant as you might get. Really? And she's like, well, what if I give the, this is a conversation we had a few days ago because Hugh Jackman's her guy, right? Like, if there's a hall pass in this relationship, it's Hugh Jackman for her. And
he might be the most hall passed man of all time.
Yeah. And I love Hugh Jackman. I might put him down as a hall pass for myself. Sure. I saw him at Rugged Canyon, like, and he was with his kid this years ago. And he was showing them like the levels of sediment and like explaining to him how sediment like shifts. And I was like, I love him.
And he's a geology guy. Oh my God.
Yeah. I love that guy. And so I told Heidi, I was like, sweetie, I don't know if it's such a good idea. She goes, well, what if I already had the baby and we bring the infant to like a early morning? And I was like, what? No, she wants to see this movie so badly. I'm like, you know what? If it's a 2-hour movie, I'll take the kid. You can go see your Wolverine. But
well, John, you're taking me to the movies when I come to LA a day before San Diego Comic-Con, so you and I can see Twisters, because there's no human being I want to watch that shit with, Matt, more than you.
Summer. Jeez, I forgot all about Twisters.
Matt, I don't talk too much about my marketing work for Universal because of conflict of interest, but you and I seeing Twisters together, that ship might have sailed for somebody on the
No.
Oh, no.
I might have
It's seen not good it. Enough for you to see it a second time.
I don't want to be like a hack or like sell the company line, but I can't talk about the fucking movie, but I can't talk about Twisters. I can't. But dude, Heidi wants to see it really badly.
I'll take Heidi.
You take Heidi, and I might tag along.
I want to believe that the pitch for Twisters was exactly like the James Cameron Aliens pitch, where someone just like wrote Twister on the board, right? Threw an S on the end, and then dropped some dollar sign in there.
I'm not talking about no Twisters, but I know when they announced Twisters, my response is why, and now I'm like, why are they making that?
I mean, now, is the next logical
step? My response is not why. My response is like,
when are we getting Twister v. Cyclone?
Oof.
I think that's the next logical step, right? Is the weather has to fight other weather.
Well, Roland Emmerich has to come in at some point and be like,
he must shake
out his skin. can we talk about this Deadpool Wolverine trailer that hit today?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
And how, what a nerdgasm I had when I was watching it. Because, first off, you guys know the Deadpool tone. You know it's fun. You know what we're getting. And you knew from the Super Bowl spot that they're going to start talking about these different universes combining in the VTA. What are they called? The RCA? What are they called? The group?
TVA.
The TVA.
The TVA, the secret organization from Loki that kind of manages time and reality. Yeah. And
they don't
else.
Want these... I was going to say injunctions. They don't want these different timelines.
Talking about incursions.
The incursions. And we saw incursions in Multitude of Madness or whatever, the Doctor Strange. I've got daddy brain already. But, you know, the whole idea is to like...
Hey, kid, I'm going to take you to see Strange. And
you got to prune the timeline, get rid of the incursions because universes...
You like Spider-Guy? You like X-Men?
You like that Spider-Boys? you see the one with the three Spider-Mens? And so we got this trailer, and we know there's incursions. When obviously, you guys have seen the Marvels by now, and you know the end credit sequence for that, and introduced the X-Men, and we got X-Men hints all around. Guys, this is a freaking X-Men movie through and through, to the point where 2 weeks ago, when we saw the disaster of Genosha on X-Men 97, and everybody started being like, we're going to get Cassandra Nova, we're going to get Cassandra Nova, and you thought Cassandra Nova was going to show up on the X-Men 97 as the villain because she was introduced in the Grant Morrison run that destroyed Genosha. Guys, you're halfway through this trailer, and who comes in full screen, live action? Cassandra fucking Nova. That was crazy. It blew my mind. I was like, dude, you guys are doing this live action? That was nuts. Can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but listen, we're all hanging right, on every right, word, John.
There's the stuff in this trailer, if you look in the background, there's a banner. One of the funniest jokes of the trailer is that there's a banner in the back for a business that says Liefeld's only feet, which is funny.
Rob Liefeld famously couldn't draw feet.
But guys,
from Deadpool, Rob Liefeld, people, you're listening to this podcast. You know this. I don't have to like.
Guys, this movie's going to be amazing. This movie's going to be amazing. I thought the trailer was hilarious. There's a cocaine conversation at the end of it that's amazing. Like, they're not, this is a hard R. Which again, Heidi, no, we're not taking our baby to see this movie. This movie is a hard R. I don't want my baby listening to this through your skin. I don't want you like 9 months pregnant with this baby.
And you don't want to like, you don't want your baby breaking the fourth wall all the time either. You don't want your baby to learn bad habits from Deadpool, looking into the camera, talking about Kevin Feige in the movie.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, man. I think there's no better thing for Jonathan and Heidi London than for you to be like, you know what our daughter's first movie was?
Fuck no.
Deadpool and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. On brand. You have to be always thinking about
it. It was
going to
be Deadpool Wolverine, but Matt Kelly insisted on that Twisters with a Z. That's what it needs to be. It needs to be like 50 Cent. And he's like, let's go catch ourselves some Twisters. And it's got to be like Twisters with a Z. And is DMX still with us?
Scott, no, he's not. He passed last year, I believe.
Okay.
Scott and Kyle actually pitched their Twisters 3, which is a Twister that's also filled with bees, which is the most terrifying thing I can imagine.
Yeah. I think this is going to be my favorite movie of the year. And I said about Ninja Turtles, and Ninja Turtles was, but I think that this Deadpool Wolverine was like amazing. The Cassandra Nova stuff blew my mind. I was like,
it might
really
be pretty
going
good,
here.
But I'm not sure if it's going to be Mutilator 2 good. Fucker. So we got...
There's good, and then there's Mutilator 2 good.
Listen.
Jordan, what do you think of this Deadpool Wolverine trailer?
I liked it. I'm a little lukewarm on the Deadpool movies. I like them, but I would... You know, I think the fourth wall stuff... Yeah, I mean, I like jokes, but, you know, I don't know. The Deadpool thing has an expiration date with me. Just personal tastes. I did think this trailer ruled, though. I was kind of like, you know what? I thought it looked great. I'm excited for it. And yeah, it's fun to like see a Marvel thing where you're like stoked about the trailer. You know, I think that It's been a while. It's been a while. I think there's been a lot of meh Marvel stuff or some stuff that's been like cool idea, bad execution, or cool idea, iffy execution, or, you know, cool idea ruined by weird reshoots editing.
Or over-editing.
Or over-editing. Yeah. Jeez, I know, right? Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of cool. I think this will start the Marvel is back narrative. And then, hopefully we get that Blade movie. Oh boy.
I'd love to see
Blade. I know what you mean, though, Jordan, because I think that there was also a point when I was like back on comics hardcore and reading, you know, going in every week, getting the books. One of the things that truly killed me was when I made my pull list, I said, yeah, give me anything Deadpool. And next thing I knew, there was about 15 Deadpool titles coming out every week. Mm-hmm, and I was just like,
Deadpool.
You know what? I think I'm done reading Deadpool. You can.
Yeah, that is a that's a comic. And Spidey has the same problem. That's a comic that even when Brian Posehn was writing Deadpool, and Brian Posehn is clearly hilarious. We love Brian Posehn, but on the page when in Jordan, you know this because you do comedy. You wrote like for At Midnight and stuff like that. But writing comedy and having the pacing and tone reflect on a written page is so hard. So sometimes there's like some stuff that Spider-Man and Deadpool or She-Hulk are supposed to be doing that are funny. And they're not just because they're not, it's not that they're not funny jokes, is that the delivery is up to, is subjective to the reader. I think Ryan Reynolds is this character. And that being said, can there be oversaturation? Yeah, we have like a Deadpool dog at this point and like crazy Deadpool stuff like that on the page.
Sure.
If I just get Deadpool movies, that's great. Do I want to see him and She-Hulk, who did the fourth wall break for Marvel first, come and do that stuff? Like, do I want to see them together? Yeah, but probably only in the movie. And then I'd like to see the X-Men take the forefront of the MCU and the Marvel Universe. I want to see the Fantastic Four come in. I want to see Deadpool recede now and be like, okay, cool. You can pop into a shot, a movie. And there's rumors that the Stan Lee now is going to be Deadpool. Like if Marvel makes a movie, the Stan Lee cameo you're looking for is a Deadpool.
I can see that getting exhausting.
I mean, Stan was Stan. Like Deadpool can easily get exhausting, but is Ryan Reynolds the perfect person to play him? And has he been great? Yeah, he's done for Deadpool what Robert Downey Jr. did for Iron Man.
And what Hugh did for Wolverine, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a nice space between the Deadpool movies as well, too, as far as, like, when they were released. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like, again, going back to horror, when you had a point where there was a Friday 13th movie every single year for, like, 9 years.
Oh, Saw did that? They all do that. Like, you know, Mutilator did not.
No, Mutilator did the opposite.
Chris Mafalia says, I'd see Twister full of bees until you're all out of bees.
And all out of meat.
That's a Chris Mafalia's reference. Chris Mafalia's co-host of One Hit Thunder. Geekscapists, speaking of sequels, that I was like, do we really need that? And then the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, we need that. The rumor of Face Off 2. You brought this up to me.
I'm a big Face Off fan. Catch me on the right day. Face Off is my favorite movie.
Wait. Other days it's not?
There's some days when it's Roger Rabbit. Days when it's Jurassic Park. But, you know, if you catch me on a particularly rainy Thursday when my...
Face Off is definitely a flipping through the channels, and if it's on, it's real.
You're watching the rest of the
movie. You're absolutely right.
You got to stop when you see Face Off.
Do we break the bad news to Chris Mafalia? He said, I'd see Time Cop 2. There was a Time Cop 2.
There's some direct-to-DVD Time Cops. One's called, like, The Berlin Protocol.
One of them had, who's the actor, the actor who did the Time Cop 2, and this will
Van Damme came back for
he
any
didn't
of them.
He came back for the Universal Soldier sequels on some of
he
them
sure did boy did he
but
ever.
That's because like Peter and Jonathan Hyams were doing it, but for Time Cop 2,
well, you're looking that up, John. I when I was at that convention, I did a hour of trivia one night, and one of the games we played was do you know the subtitle? So I would just name the subtitle to a movie, and they had to tell me what it was. And I just got to tell you, my favorite one when I was researching that was the subtitle of the movie is Ghosts of Georgia. Do you know what movie that is?
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
You're going to have to give it to me, buddy.
Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia.
That doesn't even make sense.
They moved from Georgia to Connecticut.
Ghosts are like, you know what? There are better schools up there. There are better schools in Connecticut. Let's take the family.
The ghost dad got a new job.
Well, let's play this game. The Berlin decision.
The Berlin decision. There you go.
There we go. Okay, so that was Time Cop 3.
Time Cop 2. It's not even Time Cop 2. Well, wait. This is weird. I'm going to show you the IMDb because this needs explanation. Okay, so I got to look for this thing. And let me just...
Actually, someone's asked who we would want in Face Off 2. Is Nick Cage and John Travolta still not on the...
They got to do it. Okay, so look. I'm showing this on YouTube. Oh, it says Time Cop, the Berlin decision, but then on the cover of the VHS DVD thing, it says Time Cop 2.
Time Cop 2.
With the subtitle... The Berlin decision, but on IMDb,
it might be a live die repeat thing where they found out that one was better.
But Gary,
right, pull that down soon, John, before we get flagged.
The actors, which what's funny about it is that the people who wrote it are Mark Verheiden, who has written a lot of that stuff, and Mike Richardson. I don't know if this is the Mike, but the star is Jason Scott Lee, who I was thinking of. He played Bruce Lee in the Bruce Lee story, and then Thomas Ian Griffith, who played Terry Silver in Karate Kid 3, who's the bad guy. And so Time Cop 2 wasn't without stars.
I mean,
even a dying star is a star.
There you go.
Can I just tell you a Time Cop story that James Liu told me? James Liu was the choreographer on Time Cop, and I used him. And James is a friend, and he's awesome. And James, if I'm telling this story out of school, I'm sorry. but it's not the first... Jean-Claude Van Damme was hilariously on set, but story that's ever been told. But James is the guy who gets electrocuted when Jean-Claude jumps up on the cabinet or the counter and does the splits. And I think the scene is Jean-Claude is knife fighting James, and somebody come in there, something bursts, like a pipe bursts and water goes everywhere. And then somebody comes in with like a taser or something that electrocutes the water. And Jean-Claude Van Damme, his character, sees it and realizes he's got to get out of the water. And so he jumps up on the counter and does the splits while the taser or whatever hits the water and electrocutes the bad guy that's left standing there. And that's James. So James, the guy, goes, gets electrocuted. Before that, they have to have a knife fight. And I hired James as a choreographer. James choreographs a lot of Marvel stuff. He's a pro. Every stunt person in LA seems to know James Liu. And he tells me that he's working on this. It's a Peter Hyams, I think, directed Time Cop 2 or Time Cop. And so he's working on this movie, and they're trying to do this knife choreography and it's not working. He gets getting nicked, and he's like, Jean-Claude, please, let's slow it down. Let's make sure we get this.
Stop stabbing me, Jean-Claude.
You keep cutting me. And Jean-Claude's like, all right. And I think they're plastic knives, but still that hurts.
Yeah.
And finally, they got to shoot. They're like, guys, come on. We got to start rolling. And so he goes, okay, Jean-Claude, all you have to do is take your knife and put it forward, backwards. Do not wave it around. Do not move it. All you do is straight line towards me, backwards. That's it. You're just going out and back. I will wave the knife all around it, all over the place. And with editing, close-ups, wides, sound effects, he'll sell it. It'll look like a knife. And he goes, you got it? And he's like, yeah, I got it. You sure? Yeah, I got it. And he's like, and this is after asking him, you got it? And he hasn't had it. And he's like, okay, well, this is pretty simple. And he goes, okay, ready? And action. And so they go and go. This first thing he does is start waving that fucking knife around and start cutting the shit out of James Liu's arms. He's like, I got it. Fuck. So what you see is probably
muscles from Brussels how to wave his knife.
No, I got it. No, man, I got it. I'm good.
I rewatched Time Cop recently to talk about it on a podcast. And I saw it as a kid and loved it. And the thing you remember from that movie is that Civil War heist in the beginning, right? Which is a very cool scene, very cool intro to a movie.
Sam Raimi produced that, correct? It was based on the Dark Horse comic. That's why
you might be right.
Mike Richardson's one of the credited writers for Time Cop, but maybe because it was a Dark Horse property.
Yeah. There's no other time travel in that movie. He just hangs around in the present.
There's a 1920 sequence.
There's a stock market crash.
The stock market crash. Yeah. Don't lie to me.
And then he just kind of goes back and forth in scenes you've already seen in the movie. It's like such a weird bummer to watch as an adult, because it, you know, as a kid, you remember the time travel stuff, but it's like, that's basically
as a kid, you remember Mia Sara showing her chest.
No, oh, that too.
That happened. Mia Sara from what's it called? The Matthew Broderick famous movie. God, I have daddy brain.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And yeah,
I remember seeing that.
One of the great '80s babes. And yes, you could always rely on those like Van Damme, Stallone movies to have a couple boobs in them. Mm-hmm. But there's also a Time Cop Genesis game where he flies a jetpack, he fights Nazis, he shoots giant squids, and I'm like, this is the movie. This Genesis game is this is what is Time Cop.
It's
is
not called head. Time Cop.
Genesis. It is called Time Cop. Yeah.
Was it for the Sega Genesis?
It's for the Sega Genesis. And I'm like, this is the movie. The Genesis game should be the movie.
I thought same matter cannot occupy same space, and they have a Genesis in a Genesis at that point. Wasn't the big rule in Time Cop that the same matter cannot occupy the same space, and that's how they kill Ron Silver?
They
push him into himself. Okay. This is badass. We got to find that for an emulator or something.
Oh yeah.
Because I got to find that. Speaking.
It looks like it may have been Sega CD specifically.
Which I had a Sega CD because I needed to play Night Trap.
You got to play Night Trap.
So I got to play Night
Sewer
Trap.
Shark.
Sewer Shark in that game with Kirk Cameron. Was Sewer Shark the game with Kirk Cameron?
Oh, I don't know if Kirk Cameron was in Sewer Shark. These are like full Dana, motion video games.
Because yeah, I know Dana Plato was the star of, obviously, Night Trap. And to me, the star of that game was when you get to the sequence towards the end, in the big ass guys with the guns come in, and you're like, oh cool, the cavalry's here.
I think,
and the dude goes, vampires, you gotta be jamming me.
I think Kirk Cameron was the star of the Sega CD game Bible Challenge : Escape from Gomorrah.
All right, so real quick, I'm now currently on the Time Cop video game Wikipedia page.
Oh good.
And the game was released for Super Nintendo, but a version was being developed for Sega CD, but JVC pulled the Sega CD version from being published, and it remained unreleased until 2007, when it was released on the internet as a Sega CD version coder.
That hurt my fucking brain, dude.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thank I'm you. Not a gamer. And I feel bad. I was out here saying that, like, oh, the Time Cop.
Okay, but it was Sega CD. I was about to be like, oh, it was on 3D.
Super Nintendo and Sega CD.
Yeah. There's got to be an emulator out there. But I thought you were going to give me the bad news and be like, oh, yeah, it was for the 3DO. And I was like, nobody plays it. Remember the 3DO? You would only really play it in Circuit City because it was like $600.
Right.
And I wanted it so badly because it had a Wing Commander game, even though I already had all those on my PCs. Speaking of badass live action CD games, Wing Commander 2, 3, and 4, plus Privateer 2. Speaking of badass futuristic stuff, you got that story about the Cybertruck getting recalled because the pedal sticks? Did I send you that story?
You did. You sent me it.
The Cyber Troll
on the internet.
Yeah. Yes, dude. I hope no one has gotten hurt, but yes, it is really hilarious. I love an Elon Musk fuck up.
Well, the thing is, and my favorite nickname for him is people are calling him Phony Stark, which I think is like a great idea.
I like it.
I mean, that's a pretty good one. I think the worst thing than it getting recalled, and I hope all of you who fell for the Cybertruck are safe, but the recall revealed the amount of Cybertrucks they'd actually shipped. And I don't think that was something they wanted out there, but it says Tesla has been ordered to recall. This is from CNN. Tesla has been ordered to recall nearly 4,000 of its Cybertrucks due to an accelerator pedal that can stick in place when pressed down. I think that reveals that less than 4,000 Cybertrucks have shipped and hit the road. I saw one here in LA, but if that's how many have sold, and this brings it back to time travel, that thing sold less than the DeLorean.
Yeah. If they ever reboot Back for the Future,
like it's going to be a Cybertruck. It's kind of insane.
And that'll be part of the thing. Like they'll be going toward the cliff and they're like, I forgot the pedal sticks.
it's Doyle rules.
Yeah.
Now I'm just mixing up all of it.
Speaking of video games of the era we've been talking about, I do like that the Cybertruck looks like a PlayStation 1 vehicle. I like that it looks like it was from like Virtua Cop.
Can I get the one that looks like Tomb Raider's boobs from the first game?
Yes, like, very angular.
Very angular. Let's just get that. And my friends back in Austin where they've put one of these plants to build the 7 Cybertrucks that sold. Some of my friends in Austin, and again, some of them are a little more conservative, they're still in Texas, are like, this looks tight. But all I can think of, the whole purpose of crumple features, and I know this is supposed to be crumpleless, and people are taking baseball bats to this thing and testing and being like, how it doesn't crumple. Cars are supposed to crumple. They're supposed to crumple in order to give time for your meat bag of a body to not be the thing that crumbles. Mm-hmm. And people who created cars designed them to crumble because physics, you know, I mean, I'm no scientist, but when you hit something, that energy gets sent through stuff. And if it crumbles, it spreads apart. Right. Does that make sense, guys? If you get hit by something that's solid, you feel something solid hitting you. Mm-hmm. If you get hit by something that crumbles, the energy gets dispersed and you don't get punctured by it. And here we have a Cybertruck that doesn't crumble. You gotta worry where that energy goes and what actually crumbles. Does it make sense, guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
What are the Elon weirdos saying about this? Like, how are they justifying?
I think they're just saying it's tight, and Joe Rogan sounds awesome on the speakers.
Is it? Oh yeah. When you're bumping Rogan in your Cybertruck, you can really hear the curiosity. His curiosity about Nazis. The fucking gain on the Nazi curiosity.
The funny meme was when you ride your Cybertruck at 88 miles an hour, it sends you back in time to apartheid South Africa.
Oh boy.
It's in a little close. It's a little on the nose on that one.
I wonder if they're like, yeah, fucking Elon doesn't need brakes, man. He's just going to the future. And that's why he wanted the pedal to stick.
Wait, are we talking about his like need to propagate the human race?
Oh, I guess I'm talking about like his online stands.
We're talking about brakes or condoms when it comes to Elon.
Right, yes. Elon doesn't need brakes. He doesn't need condoms. He doesn't need things that work. Yeah.
You okay, Maddie? Are we making you uncomfortable?
No. I mean, the thing
by baiting the world's most toxic online fan base. Yeah.
How dare you mock my beloved Elon? I think I forget where I was reading this or listening to this. I think it was the Search Engine Podcast. They were talking about Elon Musk, and I never knew that he was such a strong believer in simulation theory. And I feel like the second you realize that, it's like, oh, every one of these bad decisions makes so much more sense, because he doesn't think that this is real life. He thinks that it's assimilation.
No offense, it's a version of Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll all get fixed later.
Not the kind I learned about in youth group.
Right.
And I don't think the kind that we learn about in youth group that comes out July 16th.
Yeah. Amazing plug. I love that we got to youth group plugs.
But this idea that there's some,
about the Cybertruck.
The idea that there's some like cosmic like dry erase for your mistakes is insane.
Yeah.
But he's a big simulation theory guy.
Pre-order now, bit.ly/youthgroupbook.
I'm sorry, you're right. Actually, we need
pre-order anywhere you get your books. I'm Amazon, sorry, Barnes and Noble, your local indie bookstore. Thank you.
You want to be picking up Youth Group on July 16th? Or you can pre-order it.
Hey, we love a pre-order. Pre-orders really help books. This is a audience with a pull list, right?
Yeah, pre-order it, or if you want a really good experience, come to San Diego Comic-Con and get it signed by Jordan at the Geek
Store. Yeah, there you go.
They're probably going to be like, we didn't get hotels. Dude.
Yeah,
are we going to get into that
publicly? No, I was going to say, publicly?
All I know is that Geekscape is exhibitors. When I signed up to be an exhibitor at Comic-Con, it was 2006 or 7. It was one of the first things I did once we started Geekscape. Maybe the third thing I did. I was like, let's get a URL, geekscape.net, because we're going to build a network. Let's get a logo. We got a logo. And the third thing I probably did was let's sign up to be an exhibitor at Comic-Con. I did not get that booth until 2010 because it was a 4-year wait list. And I was told that if you buy it, they do things like exhibit every year, you accrue points for a loyalty program. If you add a WonderCon booth, which we did for several years, you get more points. If you buy ads in the publications, you get more points. By this point, we've been doing this for 14 years with some WonderCons thrown in. I would have thought that we'd accrued enough points to get really well treated because we were at the Bayfront, our number one choice the last two, 3 years. And I was like, dude, that's what we need to be able to walk across the grass and go right to WonderCon or to Comic-Con, especially because Matt and people are carrying stuff to the booth every morning. It's not a good gig. Sometimes like it's hard. It's physical labor. I don't want Matt to have to like carry this crap for like 4 miles. And I was like, okay, the Bayfront or like is automatic. We have so many points accrued at this point. Yeah. The loyalty program's in our favor. They put us like by the airport. They put us further away than we've ever been. And so I did not accept the housing. And we went in in the lottery with the commoners. And we'll see what we get. I know that Ian Kerner wrote me and he said, I got rejected. I didn't get a hotel room. I have not gotten an email confirmation one way or another. I did get an email at like the 0 hour right before they opened it up to everybody saying, hey, we noticed you didn't put a credit card down. Are you happy with your rooms? And I wrote them and said, no, I'm not. No, Matt Kelly needs to get his Starbucks and his donut in the morning while carrying a bunch of horror VHS DVDs, like, or VHS and DVDs. Like, you can't have him carry copies of Mutilator 2, like, or whatever the heck you carry, your horror movies. You can't have Matt Kelly carrying that stuff through half of San Diego County. Please, we need to be closer. And I don't know what their response is going to be. They might just be like, screw you and your horror DVDs.
I'm just, look, and not to sit here and be like, hey, shaking a fist. But, you know, a lot of the bigger studios didn't bother to show up for the last two or three Comic-Cons that we still drug our ass to those very poorly attended events and worked hard for.
Poorly attended? No, they still sold out. Let's be very clear. Those Comic-Cons are still well attended. They just didn't have Hall H.
Well, our aisle was poorly attended. Yeah.
And we moved. Geekscapists, they moved us. So now we're in small press where we should be over by the food court. So I'm actually super happy that they moved us. We are now rejoining our friends at Troma and Mega 64. Our old friends who used to be in our row who said, hey, Jonathan, we should move. And I was like, no, we're cool. I like it here.
And you get a nice nacho smell from the...
Yeah, we finally moved. Yeah. What's that thing? Like, there's a nacho cheese river going past our booth. Be nice.
Gorgeous.
Geekscape, come meet Jordan Morris at the Geekscape booth this summer.
Yeah, let's do
Comic-Con.
It.
Oh, and what you're going to do is you're going to go and pre-order a copy of Youth Group. KCC in the chat said I pre-ordered two already.
Hey, KCC. Thank you very much. My wife's Youth Group book, Be Just Like KCC.
She got the KC. Look at that. Ooh. She pre-ordered two. Bring your copies from your comic book store and bring them to the booth. Get them signed, or I'm pretty sure you'll be able to get one at the booth. Jordan, you've also been doing some Archie books. Sorry we didn't talk about those.
No, that's okay. We'll do a round two.
Okay.
And, I can talk about them now if you want.
I mean, dude, pimp whatever you want to pimp. And
no, thank you.
Not to kick you off, but and you don't have to rush. But
no, thank you so much. No, I don't feel rushed at all. This is nice. This is leisurely. No, you know, let's
talk about Time Cop 3.
Oh, God. Okay. So here's my pitch for a Time Cop Atari Jaguar game. he fights a bunch of triangular boobs.
There's going to be a weird version on Lynx that has like 7 pixels.
A Lynx, take Time Cop with you wherever you go, as long as you have 43 AA batteries. let's keep the focus on Youth Group. Thanks so much for letting me talk about it. Yeah, we love a pre-order. You'll obviously be able to snag one at Comic-Con, but if it sounds good to you, bit.ly/youthgroupbook. You'll see Bowen's gorgeous art, and you'll get all those pre-order links. You can check out a couple of the initial pages, and I hope people check it out. I'm really proud of it. I'm so happy with how it turned out.
And Jordan, copies of Bubble are still available at your website?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah, if you want to pick up Bubble, available now, you can get that wherever you get a book. Again, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local comic book store, indie bookstore. Bubble. I'm really proud of that one too. It's I wrote that with a great writer named Sarah Morgan, and the art gorgeous art in this thing by Tony Cliff, who does the Delilah Dirk series. Yeah, it's a sci-fi comedy about goofy hipsters who have to fight monsters. So, yeah, that sounds fun. Youth group, I should mention, a teen book, Bubble, very adult, a lot of swears, a lot of dick jokes. Something for the whole family, as long as your family includes teens and adults and no one else.
Soon to be a major motion picture.
And soon to be a major motion.
I'm putting it out there. It's all about
manifesting. Thank you. No, we love this. We love the manifesting, the secret. Yes.
And you can find Jordan on socials at?
Oh, yeah. At Jordan_Morris over there on Twitter, X, whatever. Jordan David Morris on Instagram. And JordanMorris.net, my website. And you can find all the links we talked about on there, JordanMorris.net.
I think they deleted your ex account after the CyberShark conversation.
I think they probably, yes. Yeah, it's just, they just use my account to tweet pussy in bio now. So 800 times a day, my account now tweets pussy in bio.
Matt, you can find him at St. Mort on socials, and he's also on 17 of the podcasts on this very network.
Very many of them, yeah. Horror Movie Night, Weird Algorithm, One Hit Thunder, Christmas 365, YAOK.
See, I wasn't joking.
Yeah, I think those are the main
a lot of
ones.
Pods, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
You're more pod than man now. But basically, what a man you were. You're like that girl from Superman 3 who gets tossed in the machine, but you come out as a podcast.
Oh, yes.
Remember that horrifying sequence in Superman 3 when that lady gets thrown into the machine and she comes out as like a robot? Hmm. That's you, but you got thrown into the Geekscape algorithm. Now you're a podcast than man.
I was thinking about more like Super Mario Brothers, the movie where they turn, was it like Tom Waits into a Goomba or something?
Oh, yeah. He was the first podcast. The Tom Waits Goomba was the first podcast, they say.
Yeah. Matt comes back out and he's just a bunch of ads for like, what are the different
Casper
podcasts?
Mattresses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better health.
Better health. Hello, Fresh.
Geekscape, so you can find us at geekscape.net where we post some of the podcasts, but really search for Geekscape on any podcatcher and you'll find us. This is the flagship show, but you know what? We got Geekscapes all over. So whatever you're into, wrestling, music, horror films, filmmaking, it goes on and on and on. We have a specific X-Men 97 podcast now, I guess. And we also have the Bingetown boys talking TV all the time. Just search for Geekscape. You'll find us. We're a bunch of wet mogwais over here just proliferating like crazy. That's how I describe the network. I was like, it's a podcast equivalent of a wet mogwai. Just we got way too many podcasts at this point. And then they turn into gremlins and it's Matt Kelly's responsibility to rein them in and save Christmas.
I just keep feeding them instead.
You son.
I don't think.
All right, Geekscape. Until next time. Don't hate, create. We'll see you guys next time. And go pre-order a youth group at your local comic store and bookstore. Bye, guys.
Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.